Prepare to broadcast worldwide.
You've discovered TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com.
Susan Frank talks to the animals and you. It's Wild About Pets on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to the show and my discussion with David Mizajewski. He's a celebrity naturalist with the National Wildlife Federation and the author of Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife. We're talking about some of the different animals you can go out there and see. It's a great time to watch the animals on the move as they're migrating. And if you want to see some photographs of the animals we're talking about, click the purple Look While You Listen button. The phone lines are open. We're streaming live. Today is October 2nd. Call 888-463-6748. So, David, let's talk about some of the key points for how to actually spot some wildlife. Because obviously, let's face it, we're not looking at the television. We're not looking at a zoo. These are animals who make their lives in staying hidden and watching out for other creatures and for us. So what are some of the key points that we need to know, David, to be successful in spotting some of these animals that are out there?
Well, the first is don't be intimidated. You don't have to be a wildlife expert. You don't have to be a naturalist in order to go out and have a really kind of fun, cool wildlife watching experience. That's why we've got our Wildlife Watch website if you do want to learn a little bit more. But you can also pick up a field guide or go to your local nature center, and they usually have oftentimes animals that might live in your region or literature on them or tips on how to identify them. So don't be intimidated. Just get outside and do it. It would be my first piece of advice. The second thing to keep in mind when you want to go wildlife watching is to remember that while we call it wildlife watching, you don't always actually see the animal. And we talked about this a little bit earlier. You know, use all of your senses and look for all different kinds of signs of a particular wild animal. So, you know, listen with your ears. Oftentimes, again, with birds, you're not seeing them, but you're hearing them. And that's how you're identifying and experiencing them, because they are fast and a lot of them do live in, you know, up high in the canopy and things like that. So, you know, you want to use all your senses, even use your sense of smell. Sometimes animals have an odor or their droppings do. And you know, droppings are actually a sign that animals are around. And you can count that as experiencing the wild animal if you find its scat, which is what we call animal droppings. Similarly, you can look for tracks, fallen feathers, old nests. You know, last season's nests are becoming more apparent as the trees are losing their leaves. So these are all different ways that you can see and experience the wild animals around you. So when you are out wildlife watching, if you're going to be out for more than just, you know, sort of a casual stroll, if you want to make a day of it or an afternoon of it, I'd recommend, you know, maybe bringing a backpack, bring some water, you know, maybe some bug spray depending on where you are, although most bugs are, biting bugs are sort of on the decline at this time of year. But again, bring your field guide, bring some binoculars, bring a camera so you can document what you see. And again, if you have a smartphone, you can be taking pictures with your phone and immediately uploading them via Twitter and Flickr to NWS Wildlife Watch website. So it's pretty neat, and I've actually done that before. You know, even just, you know, I'll be walking my dogs, and I spotted a black-crowned night heron along the stream near my house, and I snapped a picture of it, and I was able to post it. I just did that recently. So, you know, there's lots of cool ways, again, to use technology. But, yeah, I mean, don't be intimidated. Be prepared if you're going to be out and about. And again, if you're going to make a longer hiking trip or something, pack a first aid kit. You know, it always pays to be prepared on the off chance, you know, you fall and cut your knee or whatever, and really just have fun. That's really what it all boils down to.
And in addition to ourselves as adults enjoying having, you know, those items with us, it's great for children, and they love the idea of, oh, good, you know, put something into their hands, teach them how to use the binoculars or, you know, so they have something. And in addition to what you said, David, two tips that I had used when, you know, I was working with children and families was the idea of having that mental picture in your mind of what you can expect to see. And this is where your wildlife watch checklists that are beautiful. They list the name of the animal. They're little color photographs. Mm-hmm. I love what you guys have done for them. Having that mental picture in mind so you know what you can look for is one of those, you know, first key tips. And then also what I found work with children is, since they were expecting to see like the whole animal, because they're used to seeing their cat or their dog, their pet, and they want to see that whole animal, what we were teaching is that you have to start thinking of, you might just see a nose, or you might see an ear, or you might see a tail, and keying into that part, then you might, by looking longer, actually see the full animal.
That's right. Those are great, great wildlife watching tips. And you know, I want to throw in one more animal that you can be on the lookout for in the fall all over the country. It's monarch butterflies.
Yes.
And east of the Rockies, from Canada all through the whole, you know, sort of U.S., all of the monarch butterflies are migrating right now, and they're heading down to just a few spots in the mountains outside of Mexico, where they stay down there in the millions. So be on the lookout for those in your backyards. This is, you know, one of the coolest things, is that you don't have to go off into the middle of the wilderness to see migratory wildlife or wildlife watching. So if you're west of the Rockies, the butterflies are all moving down to a bunch of different spots throughout Central California. So you can see them there as well.
Well, Dave, that's a perfect segue into the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, which is that seeing more unusual local wildlife can be as close as in our own backyards. And so you have written a book about that called Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife. I've got the cover here. Tell us, how is it that we can draw wildlife to our own yard so we can see them right where we live?
Yeah, well, this is yet another program that National Wildlife Federation has. This one's been around for a long time, since 1973. It's actually older than I am. That's how I started here at the Federation. I started as manager of that program, and that's what led me to write this book. And from there, that's what the Animal Planet TV show is based on. And what it boils down to is looking at the needs of wildlife and figuring out how we can restore those things in our own gardens, yards, and landscapes. And so it doesn't matter if you have, you know, a typical suburban backyard or a small urban space, it could even be a rooftop or a deck or something where you're doing container gardens, or a huge rural piece of property. You can do these simple things, and there's five of them that will help attract the wildlife in. So the first four are actually the components of habitat. They're food, water, shelter, and then places or resources where wildlife can raise their young. So food, you know, is mostly what you can do is focus on your plants. That's how Mother Nature starts the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
Most animals that are going to be appropriate to visit your yard, you know, we're not talking about attracting mountain lions and bears into your yard. You know, birds, butterflies, small mammals, insects, reptiles, things like that. So many of those species are eating plant foods. They're eating seeds, berries, nuts, nectar, sap, leaves. So by focusing on what you plant, you know, pick species that are native to your area. Those are the plant species that have co-evolved with the wildlife, and the wildlife really depend upon them. And if you put those plants out, you'll attract the wildlife in. And, you know, at this time of year, birds in particular are looking for high nutritious berries and nuts. So acorns from oak trees, dogwood berries, there's a whole bunch of different dogwoods that you could be planting. Different species are found throughout the different parts of the country, but they're one of the best fall fruits in terms of their energy content for migratory birds. For the monarch butterflies we just mentioned, you want to be planting late-blooming wildflowers, native wildflowers like asters and goldenrods, because the butterflies, just like the birds, need to fuel up for this really long migration. And you can make your yard like a magnet to them as they're flying overhead if you have the right food resources out there.
Oh, that makes total sense. Now, David, I'm going to interrupt you for a second, because you're talking about putting food out and drawing in animals, but I know a lot of people go to great lengths to try and keep certain wildlife away.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the major question is, it possible to attract only the certain animals that people might want, but at the same time keep out ones that they don't want?
Absolutely, yeah. And I want to be really clear on this point, because people sometimes misinterpret it.
Mm-hmm.
When we say feed the wildlife, I am not talking about putting out human table scraps or a giant bowl of cat food for every raccoon, skunk, fox, stray cat, you know, bear in the neighborhood. That's not natural. That's unnatural. And those mammals tend to be the species that people want to prevent from showing up. So the whole point is, restore nature in your yard and you'll have the natural balance. You won't have tons of, again, raccoons or, you know, squirrels or whatever coming in, because the food that you're putting out is happening in a natural way. And even predatory animals that might eat other animals are going to need those native plant resources there, because that's what their prey items are eating. So if you're a bird and you eat caterpillars, you know, and a lot of birds do, particularly in the spring, that's what they're feeding their babies, you have to have the right plants for the caterpillars to be eating, because otherwise they won't be in your yard and the birds won't come. So that's an important part, and that's the biggest thing that you can do to prevent unwanted species from showing up is just provide your food in a very natural way.
And I suppose you go into a little bit more detail in the book about that.
Absolutely, yeah. So yeah, so it's food, water. It can be, you know, something as big and elaborate as a big water garden or a pond. Maybe you actually even live next to a natural body of water, and that's great. But it could just be a simple bird bath or a shallow dish on the ground, and different wildlife species are going to use those different kinds of water resources. And then the last two habitat requirements are cover or shelter, and then the places to raise young. And again, your plants are going to provide those. The same plants that are going to provide food will be a place where animals can get shelter from the bad weather. They can hide from their predators. You can also do things like build a brush pile or put out a roosting box, which is kind of like a birdhouse, except they don't have babies in there.
Mm-hmm.
Birds will go in the cold weather and stay warm. So there's lots of different ways you can do that. And places to raise young overlaps a lot with cover, in the sense that a lot of the same places where animals will go for shelter will be the same places where they'll have babies, like cavities, holes in the sides of trees or burrows in the ground or even a brush pile. But some species have specific needs when they're having their babies. So, you know, again, we're talking about butterflies. Butterflies need a host plant. Monarch butterflies, for example, have to lay their eggs on milkweed. That's the only plant that their caterpillars can eat. So without that resource, you won't have the species present in your habitat all year round.
And so it really sounds like it boils down to how you're gardening.
Yeah, and that is the last component is, you know, there's the four habitat pieces. You can really look at it from the perspective of what you're putting in the ground. And then the last piece, the fifth component, in order to have your yard certified by National Wildlife Federation as an official habitat, is what we call sustainable gardening practices. Because it's all well and good to plant really great native plants and put out a water feature, put up a birdhouse nesting box. But if you're out there with the pesticides and the herbicides spraying your yard and you have mostly just plain old boring lawn, which doesn't really have much habitat value, and you're wasting water by watering your yard and putting down chemical fertilizers that are polluting the streams downstream from where you live, it kind of negates the value of all the great stuff that you've otherwise done. So that's the fifth thing is, you know, provide food, water, shelter, places to raise young, and garden sustainably. And you really can make a difference for both local and migratory wildlife right in your own yard.
Oh, again, so look into that book, Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife, for more details of what David's talking about. We are out of time now. My guest today has been David Mizajewski, celebrity naturalist with the National Wildlife Federation and author of Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife. You will find the links to the National Wildlife Federation website pages Be Out There and Wildlife Watch at the bottom of the page of photos on my website, wildaboutpets.net, and also on my Talk Zone show homepage. You also find the link to David's Facebook page, which has a lot of information and links to see his videos and read everything he's written. David, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Of course, it was my pleasure.
You can listen to any of my shows and see all the photos 24/7 through TalkZone.com or my website, wildaboutpets.net. Thank you so much for listening.